Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking to the air bike guy, John Muljo. John and I spoke about how to program for the air bike, doing more things that seem impossible at first, and creating a strong gym community and culture. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find it helpful. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now on to my conversation with John. John Muljo, welcome to the show.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Absolutely. I'm really excited to talk to you today. I was saying to you before we recorded, we initially met at the Real Coaches Conference last year, and I really wanted to have you on the show, and I'm glad that we were able to make it now. So, welcome once again, and I would love to hear from you. What's the main thing that you're excited for the listener to take away from our conversation today?
I think one thing I'd be really excited about is letting people know that in fitness, the process is always evolving, the process is always changing. But one thing that stays constant is that you always have to show up and do the work, right? So no one's ever really going to do the work for you. So I think that's one of the most rewarding things about our space is that you get in what you get in what you put, you get out what you put into it. So just continue to show up, do the work, and accept the fact that the journey is going to be evolving. The journey is going to change, but just show up, put your best effort forward, and good things will happen.
That's awesome. I love that because in a world where we can buy so many things, where status can be bought to an extent anyway,
Right.
or where we can even get peptide shots and weight loss drugs and all of that, nobody can put in the work when it comes to your physical activity, even if you have the best trainer there is. So really, really cool. And the main thing that kind of caught my attention when I was I guess social media stalking you, to be honest, was the air bike because you're also known as the air bike guy. So I'd love to start off our conversation with talking a little bit about the air bike. And number one, what made you so interested in the air bike and fascinated by the air bike, really?
So the air bike was a tool. So in 2017, I have a history of knee injuries. I tore my ACL and then I partially tore my meniscus. And when I opened up my first gym, I bought a few air bikes as pieces of cardiovascular equipment. And then a year after I had opened the gym, I had torn my lateral meniscus, was having some knee issues. So I was very limited on what lower body strength work I could do for some time while I was rehabbing. So that's when I really started to ride the air bike. And I've always been someone who's kind of like attracted to the road less traveled by people. So once someone tells me something like really sucks, I'm not the type of person to run the other way. I'm like, oh, let me like look into that a little bit further. And yeah, the air bike does suck. I think anyone who has ridden any air bike knows that it is probably one of the most challenging pieces of equipment in fitness. But for me, I look at that as like an opportunity. And the air bike was a staple tool in terms of like rehabbing my knee. But when you put in hours of intense and long work on the air bike, a lot of positive changes happen physically, but also mentally too. It takes a little bit of mental toughness to push through workouts on that. And as an entrepreneur and a business owner, you're constantly relying on mental toughness just to push through daily stuff, whether it's dealing with clients, dealing with staff, dealing with just business related activities. So working on that mental toughness muscle is as important to me as working on any other physical muscle to maintain my ability. So the air bike was a tool that I helped heal me physically, but then it just became something that was changing me in a lot of ways. And then as a fitness professional, I think everyone's kind of looking for their niche, trying to find like their specialty, what they want to be known for, right? In fitness, there's, you know, we're all helping people, but at the same time, we're all trying to find a way to differentiate ourselves, differentiate our brand. And I'll never forget hearing Jonathan Goodman say, like, find the quiet space. And like the air bike is probably the most quiet space there is when it comes to fitness. There aren't a lot of coaches jumping out to be doing programming for the air bike to make it a staple in people's programming. And there definitely aren't a lot of clients jumping to want to ride the air bike. So I also use it as an avenue to kind of differentiate myself. Wow, no one's paying attention to this, but it's arguably one of the most effective tools, I would say, in fitness from a, what you can get out of it. And as a business owner, I always value like how much money do I have to spend on equipment and what does that equipment give me in terms of a return on investment for my clients, for occupying space in the gym. So for what you spend on an air bike with what you can get out of it from a warm-up tool, a aerobic conditioning tool, an anaerobic conditioning tool, a power tool, it checks a lot of boxes for me.
Yeah, I think that's so great. Number one, framing it as an opportunity tool to build mental toughness as opposed to, oh my gosh, I hate this machine. People referring
Right.
to it as like the devil's machine type of
Yep,
thing.
yep,
Every
yep.
time you or anytime you see air bike on programming, but no, seeing it as an how, what a cool opportunity to actually build my mental toughness or work on my mental
Yeah.
toughness today. And then the point of it being sort of a rehab machine, I think people are aware of how beneficial a bike, any kind of bike, can be when we might be limited in weight-bearing movements or w when
Yeah.
we've had ankle or knee injuries or something like that. But maybe for the listener who is not quite familiar with what actually is an air bike, maybe you can talk us through what the difference is between an air bike and a regular bike. And then also, because I often, you probably even more so, but I often see people use the air bike, quote unquote, wrong, or just in a way that's really inefficient. That's probably a better way to
Sure.
put it. So, what is, in your opinion, or from how you teach, the most effective way and efficient way to use the air bike?
Okay. So I'll start with your first question, which is what's the difference between an air bike and a regular bike? So the most common bike people are probably familiar with might in the fitness setting might be like a spin bike, right? And a spin bike is just you're using your legs only, and you have a gear that can adjust the resistance and what you're pedaling against. An air bike, or what's also known as a fan bike, you're using your arms and your legs, and there's a giant fan that's pretty much used for resistance. And the faster you pedal the bike, the greater resistance you're pedaling against, as opposed to on a regular bike, you can pedal faster, but you can lower the resistance. So you're pedaling faster against less resistance, or you can slow down your cadence and increase the resistance. So you actually have that flexibility on a regular bike. On an air bike, you don't have that flexibility. If you want to go faster, the only option is going faster against greater resistance. It's kind of like sprinting uphill, per se. So that's why people probably, dislike the air bike, because the harder you push into the air bike, the harder it's going to push back. There's no upper ceiling on the air bike. It's always going to win. And I would say, in terms of like programming an optimal way to program it, I would say, depending on the client, with any program, right? Depending on the client that you're working with and what their goals are and their capabilities are. But what makes the air bike great is that it is something that you can program from a rehab and warm-up perspective all the way through to like a, oh my God, conditioning, I can't breathe perspective. And it covers a lot of ground in between that. And then also we have, clients who are, I've had clients who are 6'10, almost 400 pounds, ride the air bike. And I've had like 12-year-old kids just learning how to exercise, ride the air bike. So you have two people on like the complete opposite end of the spectrum. And I find that generally, if you can get two polar opposites people to do something, it's probably safe and effective for everyone in between.
That's
So,
awesome. Yeah, no,
yeah.
that makes a lot of sense, and that's even even more of a praise for the air bike, really. I guess what I'm curious about too is just in terms of functionality, although there seem to be very little possibilities to injure yourself on an air bike, I'm sure it's possible somehow, but very little in general. Just if we look at the setup and like if you had to explain to someone who has never ridden an air bike and who doesn't have an air bike right then and there and how to do it, I sometimes feel like you see people that they just push with the arms way too hard. Other people pull with the arms. Then sometimes the seat height is way too low. Sometimes the seat way too high or way too far back, way too close. So if you had to like describe the perfect or an ideal technique, so to speak, what would that be?
So I would say if you're sitting on the bike when your leg is at extension, there's still a slight bend in your knee. And then when you are reaching forward, as the handles are rotating forward and back away from you, as you're reaching forward, there's still a slight bend in the elbow and you're not overextending forward. So you could still maintain relatively decent posture. But same rules apply with like a regular cycle. You don't want any lockout of the joints. So you kind of want to be within lockout of the knee for the legs, and then you want to be within lockout of the arms for the air bike as well.
Okay, yeah, that's great for setup. And then as it pertains to, I guess, the actual movement, do you recommend specifically focusing on the push? Do you recommend more focusing on the pull? Because even with a regular bike or with like a road bike, there are different I think recommendations that you hear. Some
Sure.
people even, you know, if you have where you can put the feet in, do you pull, do you push?
Yeah, so I
what's
would
the
say, so it's like on a road bike or like a spin bike, sometimes people use like clips and like clip their feet in. No one's really ever clipped into an air bike. I don't think anyone hates themselves that much that they're going to clip themselves into the air bike. But typically, like when you're pushing on the pedals, you want the balls of the feet on the pedals so you could actually kind of produce force. You should have a nice, moderate grip on the handles. And I would say from like a power ratio of lower body compared to upper body, it's definitely going to be more lower body dominant. Like your legs should be doing more of the work. I would say it could be anywhere from like 60 to 70 to 40, 30, depending on who the person is. But from a technique standpoint, right, if I'm doing 5 calorie sprints or 10 calorie sprints, something that's going to be like 10 to 30 seconds, like you're probably going to get a lot of arms if I'm trying to produce a lot of power. So then you're going to see like a lot of arms, a lot of legs. If I'm going to do a 30-minute endurance ride, I'm probably not going to squeeze those handles as hard as possible, and I'm not going to push as hard as I can. I'm probably going to get into more of like an endurance-based rhythm. So the same concept as if you were doing some type of like running bout. If you were going to sprint a 40-yard dash or run 3 miles, the way you approach those things are going to be completely different, right? You're not going to run 3 miles and come out of the gate as fast as you can. You're probably going to conserve some energy, get into a nice rhythm, something that feels comfortable and sustainable. And same rule applies on the air bike. You want to get comfortable. You want to find a breathing cadence that works. You want to find a pace that's sustainable for you. But if I'm running a 40-yard dash and this 40-yard dash is going to get me, a passing score in the NFL combine, I'm giving everything I got and I'm pushing as hard as I can and I'm trying to use as much good quality technique as I can. And on the air bike, if I want to do something super, super fast, same thing. So.
Awesome. Okay, cool. No, that makes a lot of sense, and I like how you frame that also with regards to attitude or approach to it, and not just like, oh, okay, I'm supposed to
Right.
bike 50 calories here. I'm going to start as hard as I possibly
Yeah, the
can.
biggest mistake people make on the air bike, and I don't think it's really the client's fault because a lot of coaches make this mistake as well, but the air bike is used as like a punishment for people. So it's like, get on the air bike, and a lot of air bikes come standard with the Tabata button, 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off. Like 99.9% of people, 0.999% of people cannot do a true Tabata on an air bike. That should not exist. And typically that is someone's first date with the air bike, which is why the air bike never gets a second date for that person. So if you're getting on an air bike and your first thing is a 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off bout, like you're gonna get absolutely crushed and you're never gonna want to do that again. But any type of conditioning work should follow the same rules as strength training, right? If you're new to strength training and you're coaching someone and they're new to strength training, you're not gonna have that person one rep max something, right? So why am I gonna put someone on the air bike and have them one rep max their lungs and their heart and like aerobic capacity? Like you're not gonna do that. You wanna build a base. You wanna see that this person's got a good, ability to breathe, ability to handle increased aerobic capacity or even aerobic capacity, and then slowly build their floor up so that they could eventually push to harder bouts, right? But the air bike, everyone starts like at absolute max. And then they never want to go back to that because, like, if you ride the air bike hard, it hurts. You get off that bike, and like, I would argue that it's harder dealing with the pain when you're off of the air bike than actually being on the air bike.
That is such a good point. I actually never saw it from the one rep max perspective. And I mean, likewise, no good coach would probably advise a complete newbie in their
Right,
first class to
right.
sprint as fast as possible for it, like running wise, without having seen their running technique or anything like that. Maybe they are very overweight and they have some kind of knee issues, and you wouldn't just say that. So I think that's a really good point. And yeah, I guess let's talk a little bit more about the modalities. So at Team Moljo Strength and Conditioning, I'm sure you implement various forms of conditioning as well. So we're talking about aerobic conditioning, so more the longer endurance without a break sort of a conditioning, let's say a 30-minute ride or something like that, and then the other energy systems, as in like the anaerobic, so where we do where we produce energy without needing oxygen, which is usually split up into like, not, I don't want to call it medium duration, but like slightly longer, maybe up to a minute or something like that. And then the ATP production, where we're talking about the really short sprints and so on. So let's assume somebody or a gym owner is listening to this and they want to use just the air bike as a cardio equipment for the next little while, and implementing that 3 times per week and a little bit of a different type of conditioning for each of the sessions. What kind of examples could you give us for each one of those sessions? And I mean, it could be in combination with various other things, such as a push-up and whatever else, or like a deadlift, or more functional type Metcon style. But yeah, maybe you can give us an example of how you implemented with your in your own gym.
So I would say that I could spend probably like 5 hours answering this question, but I'll try and simplify for our gym specifically. So our average client comes here 2 to 3 days per week. So it's hard to convince clients who only train 2 or 3 days per week that we need to spend 30 minutes doing aerobic work for them, right? So we try to like encourage them to do that stuff on their own. So we'll spend most of their time doing some strength training, but we do have clients that are like open to having cardiovascular work specific in their program. But if someone comes in and they're doing 6 to 8 minutes of warming up on the air bike and you're actually making them be honest to a certain pace and they do that 3 days a week, that's 30 minutes of moderate cardiovascular work. And then typically we'll end the workout with some type of, anywhere from 5 to 15 minute pace work on the air bike. So it depending on the client, but I would always start with like building a base. So if you can get someone doing anywhere from like 20 to 60 minutes a week of a sustainable pace on the air bike, that is going to be a great starting point. And then the other end of the spectrum, that more like ATP driven type energy system, something that's going to be under 10 seconds, a lot of people are fit enough kind of attack that. So how we do that for the air bike is we'll do like max RPMs or max wattage tests. So we'll set the bike to like target 4 to 6 calories. We know this person's going to be able to do this in roughly 10 seconds or less. And we're like, all right, just attack it to the beep as hard as you can. And then they'll hit that as hard as they can. And then the bike will populate some data. It'll give us like their max RPM and their max wattage. So those are two kind of like opposite tests. The in between is where it gets kind of hairy, because that's where you're really testing people's ability to bounce back and forth, maybe between energy systems, because people don't really know if they're not using a heart rate monitor and you're not looking at what their heart rate is at. They don't really know what like zone 1 or zone 2 feels like, or zone 3 feels like. And you have to coach people on what things they need to look for and what, like, all right, so if I'm in zone 2 and I don't have a heart rate monitor on, I'm looking at like, what does that feel like? All right, well, it's easy. You should be able to hold this pace for like 30 plus minutes. We can have a conversation. Once we start getting into like zone 3, like this should feel tough. It's doable, but you have a little bit more room to move upward, right? And then zone 4 is kind of like you're holding the absolute max pace that you could sustain for X amount of time. And if you push like 2% higher, you're going to feel your performance start to come down a little bit. So like something like that would be great for like anywhere from like a 5 to 20 minute test. You might have heard of like an FTP test, which is pretty famous in like the cycling world. Like those threshold tests are really good. The general population doesn't really know what to look for doing that, but if a coach is experienced in that avenue, they can kind of like coach that client to like what they should be feeling and expecting. for that.
Yeah,
So
awesome. I think that's really good education in regards to the zone, because yeah, most people are kind of familiar with like zone one, zone two, and like, oh yeah, I was still able to chat during that time. But then the distinction between zone three and four, certainly a
right.
lot less known. And I think sometimes people think they're in zone four, even though they're actually only in three,
Right, yeah.
exactly because of maybe it's not a poor programming, but because of, let's say, things like the Tabata that you were referring to. Like, if we're having a 20-minute, quote unquote, a 20-second, quote unquote, max effort, and then 10 seconds rest, and repeating that, I don't know, 8 times or more or whatever, it's very unlikely that those 20 seconds are going to be your max effort. Whereas if you do a 20-second sprint and then you rest for 2 to 3 minutes and then you do
Right.
that
Yep.
again, yes,
Yep.
that can be
Right.
another max
Yep.
effort that you do maybe 4, maybe 5 times, but on the sixth time,
Sure.
you're probably not going to be able to put in your full
Yeah.
effort again. So yeah, I think that's really really cool to have that distinction
Yeah.
there.
And I
And
think the air bike is excellent because you can program for all of those zones with the air bike, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do want to ask more questions about your business, about Team Mojo strength and conditioning. And so overall, obviously it's a successful business. I'd love to hear a bit from you about what you do in order to foster the community aspect, to keep people engaged, to keep people coming to a gym like yours, when I'm sure they have 10, 20 other options potentially.
Sure. Yeah. So everything is, I think a lot of our success falls back on being like a relationship driven business. And I think that number one starts with the team of people and the staff, and always making sure that our staff is focused on having a great relationship with each other, working cohesively with each other, supporting each other. And if you have a team of people that do that with each other, then it's pretty easy to radiate that out into the membership, which can then radiate out into the community. So just being relationship driven, caring about people, letting people know that we're here for them, but we want them to succeed. We try to be a high value, high touch point service business. So people aren't necessarily just showing up and working with their coach. They're getting additional points of contact from that coach. The coach becomes someone that is a part of their family, a part of their life, a reliable source, in a multitude of ways. You know, I know in fitness, it's important for us to kind of like stay within our scope. But if I sat here and told you that I just answer X's and O's about programming for clients and I don't really offer them value in other areas of your life, like I would be lying to you. And I think any coach who's been doing this for a long time also understands that their role kind of goes beyond, all right, we're just not focused on strength training today. Like there's other value that you add as a coach. And I feel like once our members have gotten to a place where they understand that. And then, you know, we don't spend money on marketing. I think we invest a lot into the product and service we put out to people. And in return, that eventually makes its way out, which gets people to come into the facility for the business. So just being relationship driven, caring about people, caring about the team, and making sure the team is, you know, filled with people of high character. We're continuing to invest in our education and our development, knowing that, you know, we have to earn people's business every single day, and that we respect our community, we respect our tribe, we want them to succeed. And I think that gets reciprocated eventually from the clients as well. They want the same for us.
Yeah, I think if a gym owner went into the business with the pure aim of making money and not actually being passionate about people and giving them better quality of life and just in general what
Right.
they're doing, then you're definitely not going to be successful long
Yeah,
term.
I don't know anyone that decided that they wanted to be in fitness and become a millionaire.
No,
You
exactly. There
know?
are definitely
Yeah.
faster and easier
For
strategies
sure.
too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love it. It's very apparent that you're doing that out of a passion. And I really think that whole, I mean, you can't really call it like buddy system, but the whole, yeah, community, like where you feel like this is your family. If you have issues, I'm sure you know, your clients bring in their day-to-day life as well. Like
Sure.
someone
Yeah.
might have, like my husband has cancer, or I've just had this injury, I've been laid off of work. And so community events, or like you might have a barbecue together
Yep.
for
Yep.
certain things, they go such a long way. So I really like what you're saying there. And I'm curious, do you have like regular small in-house competitions, or do you also incorporate like a nutritional aspect where additionally you get people together, perhaps, or other
So
things?
we have like challenges throughout the year. So right now we're actually wrapping up. Like January, we do this 30 strong challenge, which is a 30-day challenge filled with what seems to be a monstrous amount of tasks for people to have to complete within 30 days. So the initial reaction of people like, oh my God, how am I going to complete that? And it slowly turns into like this accomplishing, rewarding feeling when they realize that it is achievable, it is doable. So like that's our January challenge. In May, we do the Tour de Moljo, which is an air bike challenge. So it's as a gym, we try to accumulate a bunch of calories burned on the air bike. So it's definitely my favorite month. It might not be everyone's favorite month, but again, it's also one of those months where at the end of the month, people come at them and they're like, "Oh wow, I didn't think I could do that." And as a business owner now for 11 years, and I guess the leader of the community, one of the things I really try to strive for is how do you create a lot of moments like that for people? How do you create memories like that for people? Like I want to hear more people thinking, "Holy shit, like I didn't think I was able to do that and I did that." And not only for themselves, but like I said, being a relationship-driven business, I'm not only referring to like the relationships the coaches have with clients, but when you see the relationships clients create amongst themselves, and when you see those relationships flourish outside of the gym, so now people are getting, they're getting a social benefit and they're getting a connection benefit, and it's getting outside of our walls, then like that's huge. So how do you create more feelings like that for people? Because that is essentially what makes a small business grow and succeed. Having a brick and mortar business for 11 years, the way I program and teach now looks completely different than the way I program and taught 11 years ago. And in 10 more years, like that's also going to change. So the programming isn't necessarily going to be what makes the business survive. But the relationships people have and the memories and the aha moments and the accomplishing moments that they have here, I think is going to be what continues to drive the business's success.
Super cool. I love that. And I'm really curious. So if you get, let's say, new people joining the tribe, and they might not quite have that mindset of like, oh yay, a challenge. I can't wait to struggle and, sweat and whatever. But they're more like, oh, I'm not feeling motivated half of the time. And you can kind of tell that they're slacking off of things and not putting in the full effort. And how do you get them to develop that mindset, or is it more just like they see the other people around them and
Yeah,
they
so
do that?
I think now I think it's definitely a little bit of both. One of the benefits of having a strong community of people is it definitely makes coaching, I don't want to necessarily say easier, but if I'm a new person and I've never worked out and I have no idea what a gym feels like, and I walk into a gym and I see people who look similar to me, or I maybe kind of like know this person, and then I see things that they're doing, it gives me a sense of, oh wow, like if that person can do that, then I can maybe do that too. So when a client comes in and they see people that are just like them accomplishing things and doing things, it hits a little bit different than when it's a fitness professional saying like, oh, you're going to tackle all of these crazy things. Well, they look at you like, well, of course you're going to say that because like you're a fitness professional, like this is what you do for a living. You work out for 10 hours a day. But when they walk in and they see that person who's, same age, same community, maybe they know similar people in the area. They've bonded over a couple things, and they see that person kind of doing it, and then they see that person is kind of encouraging themselves, and they have a positive mindset about it. Like that culture is a teaching moment for that person, and hopefully like an aha moment for that person. Like, I had this like negative mindset, and then I like walked in and I saw this person who like I kind of know, and like they were doing that, so I'm like, well, they can do it, then I can do it too,
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think what you said earlier, even at the beginning, once we prove to ourselves, like once we're like, oh, I didn't think I could do that, then the next time the next challenge arises, yes, your old voice might still come up of like, oh no, this is way too hard or whatever. But you have that little reminder of like, hey, remember that time like last week where you thought you couldn't do it? You still did it. And then that encourages you to do it. And so every time, it actually become it doesn't become easier, but I guess stepping over that other voice telling you not to do it or not to put in the effort, it becomes a bit easier. But still, I would love to hear you as a leader. So you mentioned that You invest in your own development and of course in that of your coaches too. But I sometimes think of just thinking of it as in terms of like my own business and as a leader, it can sometimes be a little bit lonely because you don't have as many people nearby to look up to learn from and so on. So if you have those moments of like, oh shit, I don't know what to do, or oh shit, I don't want to push through that hard thing that I'm supposed to do, what motivates you or how do you keep making sure that you're growing and developing?
So yeah, I think something that really changed for me is I used to sometimes have the perspective that, oh wow, like as a leader, like I'm up here and like no one else is really kind of like experiencing what I'm experiencing, so I can't really rely on someone to help me with the situation that I'm in. And I quickly moved from that because I realized that like everyone around me can help me in some way, shape, or form. So, I'll start with just my team. There's a lot of high-level issues that maybe my team is not necessarily, ready to handle, but I think they can support me. And just by having conversations with them alone, it can trigger something in me to kind of figure it out. So I always like will rely on them. And I know if I need help with something, I don't think there is an obstacle too big for my team, for us to collectively handle together. And I will never say that there aren't opportunities and lessons to continue to be learned from the people that work here. And then when it comes to some other things, it's just a matter of like networking and building a community of people that you could be resourceful with. So the best thing about like being online now is you can go on someone's Instagram and like just directly message them and say, hey, like I'm inspired by the things you post. I value the education you provide. Is there a possibility we can set up a conversation? I'm happy to pay you for your time. So you kind of have to have the initiative to want to do that and seek help. So I've never been someone to shy away from that. I'm always interested in networking with people, having conversations with people, and putting myself in a position to have conversations with people I think I can learn from. And that's not just in the fitness space. I have a lot of clients who are very seasoned professionals, experienced entrepreneurs that have been doing things for a long time. And if I feel like that someone can add value or help me in a situation, I wouldn't hesitate to go to that person as well.
So cool. I love your humility and what you said about your team. And it's so true. We can truly learn from anyone around us in one way, shape, or form if we're just like open to their feedback. Of course, I also like that that there's a quote. I think it goes something like, "You shouldn't take criticism from someone that you wouldn't take praise of," or something like that, praise from. And so I think too many opinions, too many voices in our head is also not a good thing. But if you have, you have a great team of coaches, and maybe each one of them has a different area of expertise where you can rely on them, or you have a couple of best friends that you can open up to and be like, "Hey, I'm struggling with this. What would you do in my position?" I think that's really, really great. And yeah, do you have some other I guess maybe practices aside from training that help you build that mental resilience and drive and grit? Like, let's just say, I don't know, you read every day, or you do cold plunge every day, or like, I don't know, what are you, some of your things?
No, I mean, I think just showing up for the business and showing up for your people every day in itself, I think requires some level of I don't want to say mental toughness, but like just being committed to the process is huge. And I never try to get too blinded by the finish line. Like in fitness, we're always talking about like setting goals in fitness, and you will always have clients. They'll come up to you and they'll tell you like, I want to do XYZ, right? And like let's role play a little bit. Like you're a client, right? You come into my gym. All right, give me one specific goal that you have.
I would
It could be a
like to
big
have
goal.
more shoulder definition, and I'd like to deadlift 120 kilos,
Okay,
250
great.
pounds, whatever.
So now I, as a coach, like you look at the shoulder definition and that's just kind of like, wow, this looks really cool. You look at like that deadlift goal and you see the finish line, right? You see the trophy, you see the gold medal, and like that looks great. Now, as a coach, my job is to engineer that down into a process and a plan, right? And I'm going to present to you this process and this plan, and I'm going to ask you, are you excited about this process and this plan? And if you're not excited about the process and you're not excited about the plan, the likelihood of you committing to that and wanting to do that, it's very unlikely, which means it's very unlikely we're going to get to your goal. So it in fitness, I think it's important for people to have goals, but it's more important for us to reverse engineer processes down to clients and say, all right, well, like this is what that process looks like. I need you to buy in on the process because we don't get to the goal. You remember, like you have to do the work, right? Like you have to do the work. So if I can get you committed to this process, and like I said, that's variable. That changes, right? Like tell me about your life. How do we, this is what the ideal process looks like. Now let's make it a process that looks ideal, but also will work with your life, and let's get you excited about that. And if I can get you excited about the process and showing up for the process every day, then the goals will come. So I've built my business so that I enjoy coming to my business. I enjoy showing up. I enjoy my balance of coaching, developing my team, the personal benefits from the business. So like I've built the business to enjoy the process and enjoy being here all of the time. And I have found that like if I continue to do that, then our end game just continues to progress and progress. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, like your passion is tangible, and I'm sure that everybody who has, or anybody who has taken a class from you or so, can feel that too. And that's it's not just like awesome to see, but also contagious, I would say. So I think really cool. And I guess to kind of round off with, because I want to respect your time too, John. But if someone is not able to come to your brick and mortar business, so first of all, also please tell us where exactly you're located. But do you also work with people online if someone wants an online training program or something like that, or do you mostly just work with people in person?
So our gym is located in Westchester County, New York, Shrub Oak, New York, some about maybe like 35, 40 miles north of New York City. I do work with people remote. I primarily work with people in person, but I do work with people remotely. If you're interested in learning how to ride the air bike, I've written two air bike training manuals that are available for purchase on Amazon, Improving Performance on the Air Bike by John Muldrow and Air Bike Jacked by John Muldrow. So those are two training manuals that are available on Amazon. Or even if you're just looking to have a conversation, feel free to, I can give you my Instagram information.
I
You can
will link
email
all of
me,
that in the show notes for sure. Yes.
jmuldrow@teammuldrow.com. Shoot me an email. Happy to have a conversation via Zoom. But yeah, there's multiple ways to work with me, connect with me. And if you're interested in doing some type of coaching, we can have a conversation and see what that looks like and if it makes sense.
Super cool. Awesome. And yeah, I guess to bring it back to the beginning of the conversation where we were talking about getting ourselves to do things that we initially maybe didn't think we could do, do you have any closing tips, advice, takeaways for the listeners when it comes to that?
Yeah, I think it's important to every year put something in your program or put something in your schedule that gives you that aha moment at the end of it. Like you look at it and you're like, wow, I didn't really think I was going to be able to accomplish that. And like put things like that in your schedule and then build a community of people around you that are going to help you get to that. I have found that like this 30 Strong Challenge, like people look at this and it just sounds like it looks like an unclimbable mountain. And then all of a sudden, when you have like 25 people around you doing it, it becomes like an achievable goal, a climbable mountain. And then at the end, when you're like, oh my God, like I'm at the finish line already. So like challenge yourself, put something in your life that's going to stretch you out, that's going to push you a little bit further, and make sure that you're consistently putting those aha moments and those memories, not only in your lives, but the lives of people around you as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, John. What a wonderful way to round it off with. And like I said, I'll put all your handles in the show notes so people can go and contact you. And I just am super grateful for your time.
Great. Thank you for having me.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with John. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go, if you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.